This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If there's only going to be three songs worth of photographs taken, where you have to kind of cover the entire look and feel of the whole show, I want to get me on the flying V, me on the organ, me out front with the microphone, shaking my wang all around, and probably me on an acoustic guitar.
Welcome to Behind the Setlist, the podcast where artists tell the stories about the songs they perform live. I'm Jay Gilbert from Label Logic.
And I'm Glenn Peoples from Billboard. This week we talked to the singer, songwriter, rocker, all-around musician, Grace Potter. I really enjoyed this conversation, Jay. What about you?
I really did. I just felt like we were old friends. She told us some really great stories. We talked about her new album, Mother Road, which to my ears, it sounds like a great Rolling Stones track like Honky Tonk Woman. It really has that sort of 70s nod. Really great stuff.
Yeah, it's very 70s, very old school, but very familiar at the same time. I like that she's not caught in a time warp, but she certainly does appreciate her parents' record collection that she grew up on. That's Mother Road, out August 18th. She plays a number of those songs in the set that we looked at and we talked about. One of the things that stuck out to me, and I know it stuck out to you too because you're a photographer, is that she explained how being photographed in the first three songs of the show impacts the songs that she opens the set with.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never heard an artist articulate that before, but for those that don't know, typically the press, when they come to cover a show, they're allowed to shoot the first three songs from the photo pit, and then they leave. And what Grace told us is that she purposefully will do a song on the piano. She'll do a song with her flying V, and then maybe she'll do a song where she's just singing. So all three of those looks are captured by those photographers. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, and she said it like she was coming out, you know, with a big secret. Maybe not a secret. You know, we both know that, you know, most photographers have very limited time to shoot. But it totally makes sense if she wants, you know, photographers to have a lot of different looks.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a really great quote that I think set up this album. Mother Road, her new album, which is a line from Grapes of Wrath. She said, "When I was 19, I sat down with a music executive. He offered me some advice. He said, don't write road songs. They're not relatable. They make you sound old and used up. Give people the fantasy of your life. Nobody wants to know what it's really like." And she didn't take that advice. And thankfully, she didn't take that advice because this is another great album with some really great road songs.
She also talked about the 2010 song You and Tequila, the Kenny Chesney song that she performed on. And she drops it into her sets. It's very well known and really interesting story about her friendship and relationship with Kenny Chesney.
Yeah. Absolutely. So now, without further ado, here's Grace Potter, Behind the Set List. Let it roll. Grace, thanks so much for joining us today. I had the opportunity to listen to your new album, Mother Road, that comes out August 18th. Got a couple of tracks out from that. It's a fantastic album, and I would love to hear from you. What is this album all about? It sounds like just this great portrait of life on the road, but I wanted to hear it straight from you. What is Mother Road about?
I think it's a cathartic betrayal of everything I ever thought I wanted in life, where I finally kind of accept that nothing is what I thought it was going to be. And yet it's too late because I'm an old dog and you can't teach me new tricks and the road is all I know, you know? It really is kind of an explosive, reactionary, almost like a teenage tantrum, you know, that I had to have in order to move through what felt like an eternity of not being able to tour, honestly.
And that was because of the lockdown pandemic stopping all of those.
Yeah. I did all the things you could do. I mean, I was sort of a pilgrim of the what the fuck are we going to do now species. Like we did the live streams. We did, from my house. Then I did every single drive-in, drive-in show you could do. All these sort of experiments in socially distanced performance arts spaces and in every capacity, just trying to find my way back to center. And we never really got there. You know, it was just a wild social experiment. And it really rocked me to the core. So this record was my way of trying to come to terms with that and accept it for what it is and actually maybe even enjoy it.
I saw a lot of those videos and they were great. I mean, I love some of the cover tunes you did. I love some of those performances. They were really fun, but it's not the same, you know, when you're,
it's not. Yeah. I think it allowed me to tap into another part of myself that I didn't realize was sort of hiding in the wings, which is that I'm a wing nut. Like I'm a crazy person. And I really enjoyed sharing my comedic side and the true me, the me that people know when they come and hang out, or even if I just, you know, hang out outside the bus and sign a few records or do a meet and greet. If you spend any amount of time around me, you figure out that I am absolutely not some luscious Barbarella rock star. I am a complete kook. And I think I was able to let my freak flag fly a little bit on those live streams. And you got to see the real me and kind of hang out in my living room, because literally we did it in my living room.
Yeah.
You know, I took a look at your tour history. You still played a lot of dates. And as they're listed on set list, it says Solo Acoustic 2020. Are these live stream shows that have been posted online?
Some of them are. I mean, I did a Red Rocks. The Red Rocks one was probably the most sort of prominent in position of before I started making Mother Road, and after people figured out, like, wow, this isn't going to end anytime soon. I started really getting serious about booking shows and trying to figure out how we're going to do this. And Red Rocks culminated, I believe it was in 2021. My solo performance there, which was a sold out show. I mean, you know, socially distanced sold out show, but it also streamed on Mandolin. And I know that has just become available, as well as a few others that weren't available, but we've been sort of working through that content to try to get it out and into the world. Because I think that the other thing that was really cool about it was the set lists. It was such a collaborative experience with the fans. And some of it was all a request, where I would spend the week waiting for people to come up with interesting ideas or make suggestions that I wouldn't have thought of. And it really serviced my own understanding of what people want to hear me sing about or hear me sing, or what the genres and the way in which everybody kind of wanders through my back catalog. And they certainly wanted to hear my songs, but a lot of the cover songs were just so fun and unexpected. And it turned into like my favorite little, you know, collaborative art project.
How much did the venue play into that? Because Red Rocks is just such a special place to go. And it's just iconic. How much did that sort of help with with that show?
A huge amount, because the second that you announce that you're going to be playing Red Rocks, you have friends booking tickets or planning road trips to come meet you and find you, or people who've been waiting their whole lives to go. And finally the date connects. You know, I've played Red Rocks now probably 12, 13 times, both by myself with my band from the Midnight and Daylight era tours before the pandemic, but also with the Nocturnals and opening for Big Head Todd and Dave Matthews and playing Cobills with Derek Trucks and Susan Tedeschi and, you know, all these shows. Everybody who ever comes to Red Rocks comes for a reason, and it's like a pilgrimage. So when you are making a plan for a trip like that for the sake of music, you definitely think extra hard about what songs you want to hear. And it really, it's torture for the artist because we have to actually slim down the set list and make it all work. And it's challenging, you know, it's challenging to slide it all in, but that's the fun of it to me.
What's that process like for you when you're out on the road? And I mean, let's take this year, for example. You've been out on the road a lot this year already. From night to night, is the set changing, or are you playing basically the same stuff?
It's a little bit of both. So it's changing less than I plan for it to, because I brought in two new band members. And every time I'm shifting things up and sort of reinventing the show, I realized that there's not just new band members. There's also a new guitar tech. There's a new front of house sound person. We have a new monitor guy. We've had a new monitor person pretty much at almost every leg of this tour. And it's mainly because of personnel shift and the challenges that have come with a shifting live music climate. There's so many people who left live music and touring all together during the pandemic. So it does mean that I have to limit my my freewheeling stuff that I could do on the solo tours. Because when I'm solo, I can just do whatever I want. But in this last round, so we played Red Rocks 3 weeks ago, I have a bank of about 25 to 30 songs that, with a new band that they know, and I can just, we can pull them out of a hat and do them on the spot. But when I'm writing the set list, I have to put some intention into really keeping track of, like, you know, who's changing over guitars and how stressful it's going to feel for everybody on stage. Because even though, you know, there's five band members on stage, there's really 10 people performing at any given point. So you really have to be considerate to the production crew and give them a chance to adjust, especially at these sort of throw and go festivals where there's not a lot of time to dial things in and make it perfect, you know.
The set that we're looking at was from Salt Lake City, June 11th, and yep. You just had a killer intro, just a 1-2 punch. I mean, it was Medicine, great opener, Ah Mary, kind of shifts gears a little bit and then lights it up. And then, you know, one of your more popular tracks, Empty Heart, which is sort of like, you know, your version of We Will Rock You, you know, it's like those first three just light the place up. Talk a little bit about how you kind of craft your intro to your shows, and are these three typically close to the front?
They do end up at the front a lot, and I'm going to be the probably maybe say something that nobody else will admit to, but there's photographers for the first three songs, so I like to have at least I like to play three different instruments so I can show off what a badass I am. Okay, that's really what's going on there, is that I'm trying to figure out how. If there's only going to be three songs worth of photographs taken where you have to kind of cover the entire look and feel of the whole show, I want to get me on the flying V, me on the organ, me out front with the microphone, shaking my wang all around, and probably me on an acoustic guitar.
Wow.
Jay, is that the first time? Is that the first time we've had a guest?
Yes.
Say that.
Yes.
Jay's a photographer. He knows the deal.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's the real ass truth. And I mean, it's show business and I've been at this for 20 years. And I promise you, I've done experimentations where, you know, I keep it really like simmering and mellow and everything's backlit and in silhouette. And it's a total bummer for the photographers.
Wow.
And it's a total bummer for the crowd because it's like this slow burn where everybody is just amped up and the anticipation has led to this thing, is to give them the fireworks at the beginning, save a few, you know, firecrackers for the middle of the set, and then blow torch the whole place, you know, with a flamethrower at the end. What's the big deal?
Grace, your honesty is refreshing.
I mean, I'm tired of not telling the truth. It's too much to remember.
The fifth song on this set, Grace, is the new song Mother Road sounds a lot like a Rolling Stones song. You know, the album has a lot of 70s, like a lot of your music. But one thing I love about your music is it doesn't sound like you're in a time warp. It sounds like the 70s, but just influenced by the 70s. And it's your modern take on the 70s.
Yeah. You know, I mean, my parents had an epic record collection. They still do. And that wall of records, I climbed up it when I was too small to reach for the high stuff. And, you know, it informed me in so many ways, because that music to me was pop music. I wasn't really fully aware of the radio or what pop music even was, you know, growing up in the 80s in Vermont. There's not a huge amount of access to, like, you can't just walk around in a mall and hear the new hit songs. There are no freaking malls, you know, and then you get to this place where you're just starting to figure out what you like. You maybe say I'm 9 or 10 or 11. And dad let me start making mixtapes of my own. You know, I had save up money, buy a couple of blank cassettes and start making mixtapes for my friends and finding ways to speak through music and kind of show off my personality to people and use it as a bit of a language. And it always came back to the 70s for me, even though I did dip into the 90s. I loved Nirvana. I loved Green Day. I loved Alanis Morissette and Tripping Daisy and Space Hog. And, you know, I especially loved a lot of that Tom Petty stuff that came out in the 90s, where people were rediscovering him, a new generation. Same with Aerosmith. There were these sort of, new, you know, older rocker bands, you know, coming back into relevance in a really new way. And now they've got kids that are my age. And I thought that was really cool, that dads were still kicking ass and rocking. And Tina Turner, my favorite human on the planet, or off the planet, also, you know, had this sort of comeback moment in a very specific and influential time in my life, where it definitely makes the gears grind and it makes you stop and look at what's happening in modern music and what happened then. And if I'm doing the AB, I'm doing the sort of attempt at a scientific experiment of, you know, apples to oranges, I'm going to choose the 70s orange every fucking time.
I love that. I was watching the video for Mother Road, and at the beginning, you're having a conversation and you mentioned the term spaghettification, which I actually knew what that meant because I follow Neil deGrasse Tyson. And when you said that, I was like, you know, spaghetti vacation? And it's like, I knew exactly where you guys were going with that. That video is just joyful in its insanity. How in the hell did that come together?
I have been working on that particular video and or the proof of concept for The Mother Road. The Mother Road is an original motion picture soundtrack for an invisible movie. So I'm working on the making the movie not invisible, but it is also a passion of mine. And filmmaking was what I was doing when the Nocturnals cracked into my life. I was a film major at St. Lawrence University. So there was a lot of playful banter that went on in my own head by myself in the car of like, what would my life have been like if I had just continued making films and being a filmmaker and, or maybe even, you know, being a production designer, which was something I was passionate about, or scoring movies, which I remember when Titanic came out, I wasn't allowed to go into the movies and watch it. But when it became available on video cassette, I was only allowed to watch it if I played or if we did something creative at home, you know, so we put in the tape one and I play along with the score, and there's beautiful piano score in that movie, and it was very influential for me. It made me want to learn more about scoring films. And so Mother Road, the music video, was essentially, you know, the toaster strudel version of, you know, a very complex you know, arrangement of ideas and concepts and scripts that I had started and storylines that weave together throughout the entire album. And I think there's more to see there. I think that was really just teeing up what is going to be the adventure that is Mother Road. There's a lot to unpack there, but there's a reason I didn't unpack it all in the video, and why it's sort of a carrot dangling, daring you to jump around the racetrack with me.
We've got to ask you about a song you played a couple songs after Mother Road, Some Velvet Morning, the Lee Hazlewood song. Now, we looked online, and it looks like this is the only time it's ever at least been recorded on set list that you played. So this is the only time you played that, and this is late 60s, I believe, not the 70s. And if you had to make me guess what cover song Grace Potter is going to do, I probably would not have guessed this one. So how did this come about?
Well, maybe it's because I knew I had a Billboard set list interview coming up and I wanted to fuck with you guys, you know? But probably more than that, I don't remember exactly how I got on the topic of it, but I think it had to do with Lucas Nelson, Willie's son, because I had played Red Butte Gardens before. It's a gorgeous venue. It's a lot like Red Rocks in the way that it is sort of immersed in nature. And the first time I ever played there, Lucas was opening for me and his band, Promise of the Real. And I had this idea, having heard that song on the way in to that show, that me and Lucas should do like a Lee Hazlewood, Nancy Sinatra duets thing with a bunch of songs. And I was really into it. I love the idea of his voice and my voice. We both have very rare, interesting voices, and to put the two of them together could be really compelling. And I think I might have been telling the audience about that, or if not, it was just sort of buried in my subconscious that was a beautiful memory of playing with Lucas and really just being in awe of his stage presence and his performance. Somewhere in there, I was probably talking a lot, and then suddenly just started singing that song. Because that's what happens. I sort of wander in and out. Thanks to the live streams, I learned how to sort of meld conversation and song and reference and inspiration and really invite the audience in to the weird threads of my mind and weave, a tapestry together with the audience. It's oftentimes prompted by the audience, but I don't think anybody yelled out and requested Some Velvet Morning. I doubt they did.
Talk about what it's like. Picture yourself at Red Rocks and you kick off Something That I Want.
Yeah.
And you look out over that crowd and it starts to move. And I've been to Red Rocks many times and I know it's one of those venues that the inhibitions are gone. People are there to be a part of something.
Yes.
And when the music starts, they move. But that song can move even the toughest of crowds. Talk about Something That I Want. And when you start playing that, what are you seeing from the stage?
It's so funny that you say that, because I always was really shy about playing that song. And it was only recently when I realized, because I'm not like a stats guy, so I don't really keep track of like what people are listening to from my music, but somebody pointed out that is my number one song that comes up when you search Grace Potter. That's the song. Of course it would be. It was in a fucking Disney movie, you know, and I was shy about it because I recorded it when I was in the Nocturnals, but I didn't record it with the Nocturnals. So I always kind of felt, especially early on as a young woman coming up through the ranks, like apologetic when I didn't have something to offer them. I wanted them to feel, you know, validated, and like I was really happy to have them around, because I was. And I think there was some piece of me that always felt kind of embarrassed about doing that song, even though I love it. And the crowd just breathes every time. So I'm finally, you know, at the tender age of 40, figuring out that I can play whatever the hell I want. And I wrote that song based on the person I am. You know, that song really is such a epic reflection of me as a kid. Apparently I would say that my mom And I'd be, in a bakery or, at a yoga studio or, at picking up firewood from the local farm next door. And I'd be bummed out. And my mom would be like, well, what do you want? And I would be like, no, Grace, what do you want? I'd say, I want something that I want. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't put my finger on it. But that is still so how I feel and how I process, because it isn't just this thing. It's not always an object. It's sometimes this, insurmountable horizon. There's something out there, and I know it's there, and I know it's waiting for me, and I gotta go find it. So that song feels like that. When I kick into that song and I look out at the crowd, they're with me. They're right there on that horizon, chasing it down with me. And it just feels incredibly rewarding to know that that song has made its way across the world and back to the Red Rocks Amphitheater or Red Butte Gardens, as it was that night. People really do, especially when they're cold, because you're up in the hills and mountains. At night, it gets cold, and you can only put on so many sweatshirts before you just got to start wiggling. So that song really does it for them.
You dropped another song on the set list, another new song, Rose Colored Rear View, and that one has not even been released online, I don't believe, yet. So very cool that you give us the people a song they're not familiar with at all. And it's a fantastic song, I have to say. I really love it. What's the reaction, and what's it like throwing a song out to the crowd that they have not heard?
Well, I think, back in the early days touring around, when I wasn't sure if I liked a song or not, I would road test it, and it was always, even songs like Paris Ooh La La, I loved playing that song in tiny clubs and places where I could watch people and have a better understanding of the crowd's reaction based on how many people stop talking, or stop going over the jukebox or stop playing pool or, just start looking toward the stage. And it's very palpable when a song is really hitting. And for me, a lot of these new songs from Mother Road, it feels so much like the early days of the Nocturnals. It feels like the early days, even before the Nocturnals, when I would play, these cafes and little tiny bars and really be kind of gingerly stepping into my own truth and my own sort of honoring of my songwriting, where in order to really believe in yourself, you have to kind of check and make sure with your gut that it feels good to play live. And every song on Mother Road feels great to play live. I can confirm that because I have done it now a couple of times, just in rehearsals. But yeah, I am trickling out the new songs for the fans because that's how I've always done it. And what's the point of keeping it secret? It's a cool song,
It's a really cool song. And I had to take a double take because when I first saw the track listing and saw Rose Colored Rear View, I had heard that title before because an artist that I really like, Mark Arely, has a song called Rose Colored Rearview. And I went, oh my gosh, she's covering
Mark Arely.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Oh my God, that's wild.
And it's the only other version, or not version, but the only other song I've ever seen called Rose Colored Rearview. And it's totally different than yours.
That's a very random title. That title, I want to give credit where credit is due. Meg McCree, who I co-wrote with Hillary Lindsay, who brought Meg McCree in. She's a great young songwriter from Nashville. I actually think she's from Georgia originally, but she's in her 20s, and we were together writing Rose Colored Rear View as well as the song on the album called All My Ghosts. And she had this idea that even as a young woman, she's kind of already looking back at the best days of her life. In my rose-colored rear view, where everything is brand new. And people are always saying, I'm better in Rose. I'm going by real quick and whatever. She's like, I've been looking back the whole time. And she said, I've been wanting to write a song about looking back in the rear view mirror and thinking that it's better than it really was. And that's what actually inspired that song. So I'm totally shocked and surprised to hear there's another one, because I know she ain't no what do you call it when they steal stuff,
plagiarize.
Plagiarizer.
Yeah, no,
But
no, not at all. In fact,
McCrelly?
Mark Urelli. It's E-R-E-L-L-I. Urelli.
Okay.
Check it out. It's the songs are nothing alike.
I love it.
But they're
it.
Both beautiful songs, and I thought that was a nice coincidence.
Love it.
The next song in your set is your duet with Kenny Chesney, You and Tequila.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful harmonies. Tell us about how that came about.
I love talking about this song. I love the way it all came together. I love how it changed my life and my career. I love the story of how two oddballs like me and Kenny Chesney could sing a song written by two other incredible oddballs, like, you know, Matresa Berg and Dina Carter. Those are the kind of coincidences and life intersections that change. Yeah, they change all careers and also the hearts of so many people. It's, you know, this love song about hating the way that this love feels. And for me, I have so much history with the song. I've taken it around the world and sung it on boats and in football stadiums and in coffee houses and on the top of mountains and out on the beaches of Malibu. And, you know, I've driven, stunt cars and music videos and all these crazy things. And it's just one of my favorite moments where I was really taught what it means to cross over and to connect with a larger audience and really what that means for a person who's really just trying to get as much joy out into the universe as possible, which is definitely my job. That's my number one job. That's my purpose, if you will. I don't know if that was ever sort of preordained by anybody else, but it definitely feels right when I'm doing it. And that song, God, sing it, getting everybody to sing along too, because everybody knows the words, even people who don't know the song kind of know the song. And God, it just makes me smile to think about it.
Speaking of Kenny Chesney, he has played the music festival that you co-founded, Grand Point North, a number of times, right?
Yes. And he turns up almost every year. I mean, I can't keep him away.
That festival took a break because of COVID, like so many other festivals, and it hasn't returned. And what's the status on that?
Oh, God, I would give anything to have a better status report. Like I said, you know, we lost so many people in the midst of the pandemic. A lot of the folks that were on the ground floor level of that festival, the organizers, the people that build out the infrastructure, the security team, the details that go into a festival like that in a small state like Vermont, where Burlington and the city of Burlington really needs to know what they're getting into, because throwing a larger festival or allowing too many people into town can really genuinely cause safety problems. And when we started looking into it, I think honestly, I never thought of it as a thing for making money. I never thought of it as an investment in anything other than just, you know, sharing my love of my community and sharing and featuring local farmers and local, you know, local bands, and then bringing my cool friends and fun people that I've met out on the road and being like, look at this. This is what I do when I'm not out on the road. So it felt like losing my ability to contribute to the community. And it's still something we're sort of ongoing and working on. But to be honest, it's purely financial on the other end of it. There are people that aren't me that are like, if we're not going to make money and it's that expensive to make this happen, and the city has already, you know, allocated that amount of time and, you know, the sort of brute force of people that need to be there to make it happen, and it's all going somewhere else, then it does. That's what happens when you're in a state with only 600,000 people, you know? So I'm very much hoping that the clouds will part and some, you know, miracle person will come through and provide us with the funding and open that pathway for us where we can start getting some help from out of state. But in state, yeah. It's tricky. It's really tricky.
Yeah, I hope so. When I was looking through some of your videos, I came across one. It's only a minute and 15 seconds long. It's called the official album trailer for Mother Road. And there's a quote that you open it up with that I would love to have you talk about, because I was really moved by it. You said, when I was 19, I sat down with a music executive. He offered me some advice. He said, don't write road songs. They're not relatable. They make you sound old and used up. Give people the fantasy of your life. Nobody wants to know what it's really like. I got goosebumps when I read that, when I listened to you say that. Wow. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was coming into the music industry in a time when I think there was a huge sort of backlash against, second wave feminism and sort of these outspoken female voices. We weren't being quieted necessarily, but, you know, Dixie Chicks, Shut Up and Sing. This is all right around that window of time where it was really difficult to find my voice in the sort of clamoring, jostling for getting females on the radio. The concern was that in order for me to be played on the radio, I definitely couldn't sound like anybody else, but also that I needed to sound familiar. And the conversation went exactly like what was said in my quote that I gave, although I very specifically gave him an accent that is not the same, so as to protect his reputation. Because he was telling me the truth, and sadly that was the reality. When I was coming up in the industry, that was exactly the state of the union. They wanted a fresh-faced hippie Barbarella country bumpkin who could transform and transcend, and who could sing about everyone and everything all at once, just like, you know, society would like to allow women to sort of break out of our normative roles. We also have to kind of find our way back in and file ourselves back into the cabinets when people get uncomfortable. And I think there's been a huge amount of me learning, the learning curve being that I never cared what people thought. And in hearing that particular quote, it really, really conjured for me the Evel Knievel within myself. So I was like, well, fuck you, man. If that's the box I'm trying to check, and if that's the way that people want me, if they want to keep me contained or place me in a Barbie doll box that will never be opened or whatever, I'd rather just kick down the door and, I don't know, go work at a hardware store or something, you know?
I want to get to the encore here. You played 14 songs with a 2-song encore, and the last two are The Lion, The Beast, The Beat, and Paris, Ooh La La. And they seem like they could go at the front of the show if you want to bring out something boisterous and bring the energy. Or they could go at the back also, and they seem like great encore songs. Do you like to end with these two?
Just like you said, I think there's a bookend effect. Like I said, you know, you open with fireworks, close with a flamethrower. That this is very much a couple of songs that can do that. It's not the only two that can do that, but the 1-2 punch that I like with that is that I don't have to do a guitar changeover. I can stay in F sharp. And so I know that sound, I'm going to get kind of nerdy with you here, but like I do this kind of Jimmy Page open tuning without a major string. For me, there's a way that once you settle into a key, it creates a mode where even if the tempo changes, or even the feel or the song or the topic changes, you've created an agreement with the audience that there's a pulse and a heartbeat and a wavelength that you're going to maintain. And I have a really hard time in live music with stopping. I hate stopping. And I'm sure if you listen to my live shows, you can hear there's a lot of times where there's a great deal of transitioning from one song into another and from one key into another, because I don't like being given blank spaces when it's possible to create an arc and a bridge between two songs. Because what happens is when there's quiet, then I talk. And when I talk, listen, I might say some cool stuff, but like 10 minutes later, I'm still talking. I like the energy, and I believe in making that agreement with the audience that there will be 3 songs in a row before anything stops. So for me, what's cool about Line the Beast, the Beat is that it is kind of 2 songs. You know, there's this intro piece with the drum section and the sort of summoning, almost, invocation of an audience and band consummation of the marriage, if you will, where we come together, we're singing together, I'm reaching out to the crowd, I'm communicating with the crowd, I'm encouraging them to sing along. And then suddenly the beat changes and we get into the body of the song, Lion, the Beast, the Beat, which is a real pace shift from the intro. And then at the end of that song, it's a big old blazing, you know, jet engine airliner and landing. And so we could easily end it there. But what I also really like and enjoy in participating with the audience in the set list creation is if I don't need to pee, there's no reason to leave the stage. Encores are bullshit, and it's way more fun to leave when there's a reason to, and then make them wonder if you're going to come back. And then when you do, it's so much more rewarding than just leaving out of, okay, this is the part where we walk off stage. So that's why Paris ended up back to back with Lion, the Beast, the Beat, is that there's an opportunity to end the song, but if we're doing great and if the, you know, if the fireworks are firing off, if the flamethrower's got enough fuel in it, we'll just keep going. And that's what we did at Red Butte. And we often will stop there, but I just didn't need to pee that day.
I love that. As we wind down here, Grace, I wanted to ask you about one of my favorite song. Well, I guess it's songs, Nothing But Water. The a cappella stuff, yes, it's just stunning. And I can imagine you can open a show like that. You could close a show like, yep, that. It's just, absolutely, one of those things that it gets people's attention. And then, you know, the second part of that, it almost sounds to me like a gospel inspirational thing. Like you're, yep, you know, talk a little bit about Nothing But Water, because I absolutely love those two pieces.
Yeah, thank you. And Nothing But the Water is also one that has, again, very much like Lion, the Beast, the Beat, there are these two parts to it, which, you know, is just how I am. I think about music that I love, and it usually has the sort of fire and water element together. So for me, that song was my opportunity to sort of unveil the part of my personality that grew up wishing I had gone to, you know, gospel choir, and wishing that I had had a church to go to that made music like that. And because I didn't, and I grew up in Vermont, it was very interesting, sort of the study of, and the, I guess it's a case study in how much I knew I didn't really belong anywhere in particular, and how much I felt the calling of music. Because to me, when I'm singing gospel, I feel more at home than anywhere. It really does feel like those chords and that summoning of the spiritual energy, you know, it got under my skin very early on as a kid, listening to the Staple Singers or Mahalia Jackson or Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Like those are the instrumentals and then the vocals that like fully transcended anything human that I had ever witnessed in my life up until that point as a young teenager, maybe 12, 13 year old, just going, holy shit, I got to get into this. This, you know, Zeppelin is amazing and The Who is great. Jethro Tull rocks. I love the band, but what the fuck is this? So that storytelling finally made its way into my lyrics and my songwriting when I came up with Nothing But the Water. And I'm very, very proud of that one. And I'll continue to, that one is great opener, great closer, great mid-set, like reset, because I can break it down all the way to just me again, where sometimes the audience needs an ear break. So I'll strip it down to You and Tequila, or one of the other new songs on Mother Road is called Little Hitchhiker, where it could just be me solo on a guitar. And then I can take it down one step further to just me with my voice. Ooh. And that, I think, is a very powerful thing to give the audience a little ear break, but also to show what a voice can do, especially in a venue, an outdoor venue like Red Butte Gardens or Red Rocks, where it really is just you and the rocks, so you and nature, and the world can see you naked. And you can see the world naked, and it just fits right in.
Grace Potter, thank you so much for joining us. You have a lot of tour dates through the rest of the year, so good luck out on the road, and good luck with the album release.
Oh, thank you so much. I love what y'all do. I'm so glad that there is a place and a space for the set list. It's been my life joy, and it's been a great joy speaking with you two today. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was a joy. Thank you so much.